Welcome to Conversations with Consequences, now on EWTN Radio. I'm your host, Ashley McGuire, and we are joined by our friend Joe Wilson, who we've spoken with before about a topic that I really love, which is movies. And it's a perfect time to be talking about movies because the Pope just released his favorite movies. And so everyone's kind of talking about the Pope and movies. So, and Joe has compiled alongside with Cameron De La Fleur a list of what they call the official list of 100 movies that every Catholic should see. So, Joe, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me, Ashley.
Great. Well, so let's jump right in and let's talk about the Pope's list. What was your reaction to that? I know mine was surprised by how short it was. But also, it had one of my absolute all-time favorite movies on there that I thought was a little bit of a surprise, which is Life is Beautiful. But I'd love to hear your reaction first.
Yeah, my first reaction was the Pope has excellent taste. Three of the four movies are on our list of 100 movies every Catholic should see. So that was kind of a nice surprise and a good feeling for us that, yes, we got it. His four movies are It's a Wonderful Life, The Sound of Music, Life is Beautiful, and Ordinary People. And I think the four of them taken together, at first it seems like kind of a diverse group of films. You've got a classic from the 40s, you've got a musical, an Italian film about the Holocaust, and then Ordinary People is kind of this very small family drama set in the Pope's hometown, Chicago. Which one of the things we were joking about at our blog was we were wondering if the Blues Brothers was going to be on this list or not, but it was not. the four of them seem pretty disparate, but actually when you look at them a little bit more closely in the themes, there's a couple of things that really stick out that I think are really indicative of Leo's taste in story and also how he kind of sees the church, and it's really great. So the two things that stuck out to me were the beauty of a life well lived and the importance of family. It's a Wonderful Life is all about those two things, right? You've got this guy, Jimmy Stewart's character, George Bailey, who sort of sees the material success of his life kind of crumble in front of him and despairs about that. But he is shown by an angelic visitor that really his life has been incredibly well lived and it's impacted every member of his community. The Sound of Music shows the difference that Fraulein Maria can bring into this family by bringing this kind of joy and happiness and virtue into this family that's really been marked by grief. Life is Beautiful has the main character in that, I forget, Guido is his name. And he just brings also this kind of sort of holy joy and virtue into the life of his family, even under really terrible circumstances. I mean, he's a Jew living in fascist Italy and ultimately gets deported to a concentration camp. And then Ordinary People kind of shows sort of the lack of that, how there's this family that's sort of been skating by, living very materialistically, sort of self-centered lives. And this tragedy happens that forces them to kind of overcome that and to bring that virtue back into the center of their lives and to work together as a family and a community and strive for something greater than themselves. And Ordinary People, actually, I had not seen before Pope Leo recommended. I watched it that same day and it was really, really awesome.
Well, that's so interesting because I'm the same. I had not seen or even heard of Ordinary People. And I was a big Robert Redford fan when I was a girl. So I was like, I got to watch this. Haven't gotten to it yet, but it's top of my list. But I wrote a piece for our Substack about his movies. And one of the themes that you mentioned is exactly the one that I drew out, which was family, the centripetal force of the family. I mean, really, it's the family as the protagonist, as led by a heroic man, a heroic yes. father figure. And I was like, you know, the Pope himself is a father. And, you know, I thought it was interesting that you have Captain Von Trapp, who's this very cosmopolitan, wealthy man, but then you have the other two male protagonists, George Bailey and Guido, and the word that came to my mind was ordinary people.
Yes.
So I was like, yes. Are you playing with us here, Pope Leo? no, but they're ordinary men who end up becoming very heroic figures to their families, to their communities. And I was really taken by that list. So I had kind of similar reactions. Well, let's talk about your list because I went back to it and I was reminded that I got to keep working through your list. But tell us how you got the the idea to make this list, and what was the science to it?
Yeah, so the science to it. There's not much science to it, to be honest, but we'll get to that. So this list kind of came together. We had a group of friends at Christendom College, which is where most of us went to college. And as we graduated and kind of moved away, we kept talking about film, over email, over text, over chat groups. And this idea came up that there's not a book of like a book of 100 movies every Catholic should see. There's several other books that are out there in the more secular world for different genres. There's a really famous one called 1001 Movies You Should See Before You Die. And we were saying there should be one of these for Catholics. I was in grad school at the time. My friend Sam was still working at Christendom. He was the Rome coordinator at Christendom for a while, so he was very busy. I was very busy. All of our friends are busy. And as a grad student, I kind of knew how much work a book takes. And so I suggested to Sam, hey, instead of like trying to sit down and write this book and, it'll take a couple of years and we'll get really excited about it at first and then kind of drop off. I said, what if instead of doing a book, what if we did a Substack blog? And what if we did just one a week? That one post a week is pretty achievable, I think. And that will build up this sort of list. And then we can publish it as a book or we can leave it as a blog, however we want to do it. And that's kind of how it started. And that was nearly 3 years ago now that we started. And at first it was just sort of something for us and our friends. We started, other people found it. It started kind of taking off, and we're really proud of where we went with it. But the funny thing is, we didn't start with a list of 100 movies that we were then working through. We started with, we probably had 25 or 30 that we knew had to be on there. But then we opened it up to our friends and we said, hey, if you think there's a movie that Catholics should really see, if you've got a good take on one of these movies, pitch it to us. Give us an article, we'll read it, and if we think it does fit the mission of the blog, we'll post it. And so that's why the list is not ranked. So if you look at it, it might look ranked at first because A Man for All Seasons is the first movie we started with. But as you go through, you kind of see, okay, Passion of the Christ is way down the list. Ben-Hur is number 100. There's different things, and we tried to time it so Passion of the Christ released on Good Friday 1 year, for example. We did It's a Wonderful Life at Christmas time. So there's not a ranking to it. It's just sort of as we were moving through the list, as people were giving us ideas and pitching articles, we picked it up, we published them, we got through the 100, and we didn't miss a week in the first 100, which we're really proud of as well. And it accomplished exactly what we wanted it to, which is we got through the whole 100 movies, we got a really great review and sort of deep dive into each movie, and we actually finished it. And we're very proud of that. Now we're a third of the way through our second 100. So we're still going strong.
Well, it's a great service because as a mom to five kids, including a teen, tween, an older elementary, finding quality movies to watch. I mean, we try to do a family movie night every Friday night, and we very quickly exhausted what we felt were, when we first started doing this, kid movies that were clean and not woke. So then we started turning to old classics like Sound of Music. And interestingly, one night my husband, you mentioned Ben-Hur, suggested the movie Ben-Hur. And I said, "Are you nuts? You think our kids are going to sit through a 4-hour movie?" And they were rapt. And that started to transform the way we approached watching movies. And we have found, and it's funny, I went to look at your Substack when I was pulling back up the list, and I noticed you did a review of Zootopia too. And we just took our kids to see that in the movie. I agree with you, and didn't capture their attention in the same way that another movie that I had since watched from your list that we hadn't the last time you and I spoke, which was Cinderella Man. Again, a movie that you think this is too heavy for an 8-year-old boy. It's a Depression era movie about a boxer. And oh my goodness, the kids, we watched it. And I think a few weeks later, they said, "Can we watch it again?" So, talk a little bit about what your thoughts are on that and kids and kind of like our entertainment culture and what our expectations should be of children and movies.
Yeah, that's something that I'm really passionate about. Right out of college, I was a teacher, and so I think about that a lot, about how to convey some of these really deep things to kids, what is appropriate for a kid at what age, and things like that. And it's something that we did think about when constructing the list. Now, a couple of movies did squeak by that I would not suggest for family movie night necessarily, but most of them we did try to make sure this is something that if a Catholic family came across this list, was looking for something, they could pick something off of here. And for the most part, it's going to be something that the whole family can enjoy. And I've found when working with kids, especially with tweens and teens, they can often handle sort of thematically more than you give them credit for. So, like with Cinderella Man, for example, the way that that family is going through some struggles because of poverty, because of whatever else. It's a movie that I saw as a, I think, as a teenager, and I loved it. It's something that these kids, they can pick up more than you think of thematically. Now, obviously, you don't want to throw ultra violence in front of your kids. You don't want to get too deep into more sexual topics, but themes like this often we don't quite realize what our kids are ready for. And if you put something great in front of them, something that you know is clean, but might be a little deeper, often they'll pick up on it and they'll love it. And the stuff that they don't get just kind of goes over their head and they stick with the good storytelling, the beautiful imagery. Cinderella Man is a boxing movie. And so an 8-year-old boy, even if he's not getting all the stuff about what the depression is doing to this family, he's going to enjoy the fight scenes, you know. And there are kid characters in that one to kind of relate to as well. You think about something like It's a Wonderful Life, which a lot of families watch around Christmas time, going back to the Pope's favorites. That's got a lot of really heavy stuff in it. There's a lot going on in that movie that you just don't pick up on when you're a kid and you're watching it for the first time. The Sound of Music. You've got the great music, the kids and this family coming together and singing. They pull pranks on each other. There's a lot of joy there, but also there's kind of a darker undertone with the approach of Nazism. And so I really do think I'm proud of our list. And I think that for the most part, I would say probably 9 out of 10 of our movies, you can put them on for family movie night. They're going to be great. They're going to be clean. And the kids are going to be engaged. And some of the other 9 out of 10, the reason the kids won't like him is because it's a foreign film or something. They won't quite get as engaged with that. But there's really only one that I can think of that kind of slipped through that's maybe a little bit too violent. But other than that, off the top of my head, I think all of our films, they're great for exactly that sort of thing.
You're so right. And I was remembering when I saw Life is Beautiful on the Pope's list that I was 13 when that movie came out. I actually went up and checked the year because that was the first. I loved that movie so much that I went and took my own money and went down to Blockbuster and bought it. I didn't rent it, I bought it after I'd seen it because I was like, I'm going to watch this movie. It's so funny now, I couldn't even watch it if I wanted to in that format. I have to buy it again. But I was 13, and it just, I was able to process and think about, and I think that movie is a good introductory Holocaust movie for younger audiences because it's not so disturbing and graphic as others. But one of the movies that we watched with our kids, to your point about what kids are ready for, was another long movie. After we watched Ben-Hur, we're like, let's try another long movie. We watched Fiddler on the Roof. And that was the first time we ever had to have a conversation with the kids about anti-Semitism because they were confused. They were like, why don't the Russians like the Jews? And we kind of had an introductory conversation about that. And then 1 week later, October 7th happened, and it was on the front page of the newspaper. And my kids were able to, gosh, I get emotional. It helped them to understand. On a less heavy note, let's talk about Christmas because It's a Wonderful Life is a regular. We have a few movies, many of which are on your list that are annual movies in our family. That's one of them. But what are some of your, even if they're not on this list, what are, maybe your top five holiday picks?
Top five. Let me think. That's hard because I love Christmas films. Christmas is my favorite holiday. Growing up, that was kind of the big time, both for family but also for church. I was in our church choir and we did a lot of Christmas carols before midnight mass, and so that was a big part growing up. And Christmas movies were always a part of that. It's a Wonderful Life, definitely up towards the top there. You really can't beat it. For really diving into the true meaning of Christmas. There's a lot of Christmas movies out there that go into the more commercial aspect of it. And I don't think that that's necessarily always problematic. I like giving gifts. I like receiving gifts at Christmas. But It's a Wonderful Life gets back to that true meaning, which is looking at imitating Christ. My post for the It's a Wonderful Life on 100 movies goes into that about how George Bailey is a Christ figure. He suffers for his family. He suffers for his community and is always sort of pushing for that. So that's one that I always love watching around Christmas time. Another big one for my family was White Christmas, with Bing Crosby and Danny Kaye. Another musical, just something that we always really enjoyed as a family getting together and seeing. And one that my wife's family also is a classic there. So that was something that we really enjoyed bonding over. There are a lot of adaptations of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. My favorite one was done in 1984. It stars George C. Scott. And that one really kind of also encapsulates kind of the meaning of that book, the meaning of Christmas, how it's not sort of something that you can buy, something that is purely material, but that it's a time for reflection, a time for going out of yourself and being generous, being charitable, being merry, because of course we have a reason to be merry now that Christ is born. Let me think. That's three. The Charlie Brown Christmas special always kind of rolls around. That's a short one, but literally explicitly Christian, that one. Something that you wouldn't see on television these days from a cartoon. Linus reads the gospel story, and that's what kind of lifts Charlie Brown out of this kind of seasonal depression that's brought on by all that consumerism. It wrestles very explicitly with that, and again, it's something that it's a kid's cartoon. And yet it's wrestling with these very deep adult emotions, things that we're dealing with as we grow up. Christmas is very simple as a kid, but as an adult, you start seeing kind of this different tension. And so that's something that special does really well, I think. And finally, The Miracle on 34th Street. I'll go with that one. That's one that really. It takes Santa Claus. He's kind of the center of that story. And it digs deep and it finds Saint Nicholas under Santa Claus. And there's a particularly great scene in the 1947 version where the real Santa Claus, Kris Kringle, is acting as a mall Santa. And he's talking to all these kids. He's bringing joy to these kids. And there's this one kid who's in line, who is from the Netherlands. I think she's a refugee from the destruction of World War II. And the adult that's with the kid says she's not going to understand what's going on here. She doesn't speak English, but she saw you and she really wanted to come meet you. And Kris Kringle starts talking to her in perfect Dutch, and he sings this Sinterklaas song with her, from her own culture. And it was this sort of moment of magic where this kind, loving embodiment of Saint Nicholas is reaching across and making these sorts of Christmas miracles for someone who was not expecting to meet Sinterklaas that day, you know. And I really, those five, I want to say they're all fairly old, actually, now that I think back on it, but those are some of my personal favorites.
know
I
that.
think Pope Leo actually has a list of Christmas movies he recommended to like 10 or 15 years ago, back when he was Father Prevost. I'll have to look that up and send it to you.
That 1947 Miracle on 34th Street was another, like, when will I learn my lesson? Because I was like, the kids aren't going to want to watch a 1947 movie. Let's watch the new one. I've heard people say the new one is actually a pretty good adaptation, but again, they loved the old one. So there was one movie that caught my attention, a bit of a surprise, and yet not in some ways, which is The Godfather. I'm married to an Italian, and we probably watch The Godfather 3 or 4 times a year. Usually, because it's just on, it's just always on. Like, if you go through the channels long enough, The Godfather's on, and there's never anything good on. But, coming on the holidays, I feel like it's always on at Thanksgiving, it's always on at Christmas. I could see people being like, this is a horrible movie. And that may be the one that slipped through that you said, because of the violence. But, and yet I can see thematically why. So tell us why that one made it on the list.
That is one where it's sort of a controversy in Catholic circles, as you kind of say. There's people who say, oh, that's a horrible movie, it's terrible, and some who say, no, this is actually a really deeply Catholic movie in some ways. And it was made by Francis Ford Coppola, who's raised Catholic, sort of lapsed Catholic, but always keeps that culture and that mindset with him as he makes his films. And the great thing about The Godfather is it's one of these stories where you see how vice can actually corrupt and ruin a good person. So Michael Corleone, he kind of starts out as this young, kind of optimistic person. He wants to get out of the mafia, out of the family business, right?
That's
He's made a
my family. That's not me, Kay.
Yeah, exactly. That's what he's trying to say. But due to different loyalties, different vices, and even a really good impulse, which is to stand up for his family, to be part of his family, to protect them and to help them, he gets drawn into vicious action and ultimately kind of breaks down into he becomes the Godfather character. And you have that wonderful and awful juxtaposition of the baptism scene where he's there, he is literally doing he is participating in a sacrament. He is becoming the Godfather for his nephew, while at the same time he's ordered all these hits on some of his rivals. And ultimately, if I remember correctly, he ends up killing the father, the natural father of his godson. It's kind of this interesting look at what vice can do to a person, even through good intentions, noble thoughts, noble actions. And it's a good warning for all of us to kind of look at that and to see. Always interrogate your actions, even beyond your motivations. The end don't justify the means. Look at that because you might be walking down a bad path without knowing it. But then on top of that, there's even some nobility and some things to admire about these mobsters, right? Don Corleone, he's got these lines that he won't cross, right? He won't go into drug dealing because he knows it will destroy his community. He sees himself, even though he is a criminal, a very violent man, as someone who is a protector, a sort of shield over both his family and the wider kind of Italian community, in his city. And so there is nobility there. There is things to admire, as well as a darkness that you've got to see. Okay, these two things can coexist. Nobility and vice. You can admire someone who is vicious, but you have to look at that and you have to see, okay, that vice is eventually going to take the nobility down. These people all end up dying violently. They all get brought down. They all get pushed out, betrayed, backstabbed. And it's that very vice, that tragic flaw that's in them that always ends up bringing them down. And so I think that it functions very similarly to some older classic like Greek tragedies. Or you have a noble character who has a flaw, a vice, and that vice is what brings them down. And on top of that, it's just a really great piece of storytelling, well told, beautifully shot. That's something that we always tried to privilege in our list as well, is we're not looking for stories that just have a good message. There's lots of stories that have good messages that frankly aren't very good. They just the filmmaking doesn't hold up. And so when we see a movie that has this sort of care in it, in the story, but also the care in the presentation, that's what we're looking for the list. And I think The Godfather really hits both of those.
Well, I feel like I could keep talking to you about this all day. I didn't even get to science fiction, which is my favorite genre. So we'll have to have you back. But where can our listeners go to find your list and your commentary on films and anything else you're doing?
So our main place is on Substack. You can go to 100catholicmovies.substack.com. That's 100catholicmovies.substack.com. You'll find our list. We have an ongoing list of movies we recommend every week. We also do reviews of new movies. We have a weekly watches section if you want to support us financially, where we just give sort of quick reviews. They can be either positive or negative for different things we've watched that week. We also have a YouTube channel. You can find us there under Reconquista Media. We haven't been active recently, but we're hoping to ramp that up again soon. And those are really kind of the two main places you can find us. So, but the main place is the Substack, 100catholicmovies.substack.com.
Joe Wilson, thanks so much for joining us today. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you. God bless.